Welcome to the IVM Podcast Network.
If you like the Drinks and Destinations podcast, which is an IndusVox media production, we also have other podcasts like the Stylogram. If you're looking for some stylish tips, you do tune into that.
You're listening to the Drinks and Destinations podcast.
The caves of Sandman and Villanova di Gaia could give you chills if you are left inside alone, told my friend, who was accompanying me on a tour of the centuries-old Sandman cellars as we walked towards the entrance. The occasional sighting of the Don in his black and white attire with a black cape and a wide-brimmed hat reminded me of some sort of a Dracula movie. I was expecting to see a tour guide wearing the iconic Sandman uniform with a scary mask on his face, but instead we were welcomed by a 20-something fluent English-speaking handsome devil. Well, I meant a regular human being. So where was I? I was in the heart of Porto City in Portugal. Well, hello ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Drinks and Destinations podcast. I am your host Rojita, and with me is Samita. And we bring to you today a very special episode on the sunshine country, Portugal. Samita, did you know that there are 21 bottles of Sandman, also called Sandyman, sold every minute worldwide?
Wow, I had no idea.
So it's also the first bottle of Porto to be sold.
Okay.
And the credit for that goes to none other than the icon, the Don.
Drawn
in 1928 by the French artist who was not French. So he's basically a Scottish artist called George Massier Brown, who approached Sandman for business in 1928. At that time, French posters were very much in vogue. And George signed his artwork as G. Massier to hide his Scottish origins and pretended to be a French. And so was born the first iconic logo for a wine brand, the remarkable silhouette of the Don. Brown wanted a figure that represented the mystery and sensuality of a glass of ruby red port. So he drew a mysterious figure wearing a Portuguese student's cape and wide-brimmed hat.
Wow, sounds very, very mysterious and intriguing. Well, you know, it's interesting to know, Rojita, that Sandman is the most famous wine company in Portugal, making Porto and Sherry wines since back in 1790. Now that, you know, usually when you say Portugal, you don't immediately connect that it would have such a deep connection with wine. But now, since you're talking about your visit and we're talking about Portugal today, you will really get to know what amazing wine they actually have to offer and how they're connected to wine. And since 1935, Sandman icon, the Don, has become one of the three most famous characters in the alcoholic drinks industry worldwide.
That's true. And I have a video from my visit to the cellars of Sandman, where I had a private tour, and here is what we found.
And so the vintage wine, these are always considered the best port wine that exists, because these are the only ones, there's another type, which we can talk in just a second, but these come from one single year of harvest. And so that's why you always see the indication of the year they come from, as we're seeing right now, 1904, 1906, 1907. Those are the years of the harvest of those single wines sitting there. And actually, these wines are going to have such an extraordinary quality in the harvest season. They're going to be chosen to be aged in bottle 2 years later, because we need the approval of the Port Wine Institute, exactly. And after 2 years, these wines are bottled and they're not ready to be consumed, of course, but they're ready to be stored, and they're going to keep on growing with time in bottle. So these are actually the only port wines which you can keep, and they will get better with time. With all of the other ones we're talking about now, you can keep them for 30 years if you want. But the wine will be the same once you've bought it. It's exactly, once the wine is bottled, it's exactly the same. These, because they're not filtered before they're bottled, we leave really a lot of tannins in the wine. And so that's why these ones can keep on growing with time in bottle. And actually, as far as I've seen, there's no limit for these ones to age in bottle. Just last year, there was a cellar which belongs to the same company as we do, which is the Foreda cellar. They sold a bottle, a vintage bottle, from 1815, so from 200 years ago. And
so, you know, That such old wines, they are all stored inside the cellars in Villanova di Gaia.
Cellar, it looks haunted,
isn't it? That's the reason my friend told me. You know, you could get scared if you're left alone in that place for a
I feel
long
like somebody
time,
is going to come out of one barrel and be like, oh, "What are you doing here?"
And the Don, did you see the Don? He's quite handsome.
He's quite cute. Yeah, I think so. And with the whole hat and the cape, wow.
Yeah, that works.
So all the single girls out there heading to Portugal.
Yeah, you should look for the Sandman cellar.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's not just Sandman. There are many other wine companies such as, you know, Taylor's Port, Graham's Port, and then, you know, Caves Ferreira, where you travel back to the origins of Portuguese tradition. In this cellar, you learn more about the history of port wine and the Douro region and discover one of its most iconic figures, Dona Antonia Adelaide Ferreira, in the Caves of Ferreira place. And that place also has one of the best views of the river from Villanova de Gaia side of Porto. So the Porto city that we're going to talk about in some time, they, you know, it's such a beautiful place where there's so much of culture, vibrancy, so much of sunshine. That's why I said it's my sunshine, you know, city in the world maybe. So that's a beautiful place to visit, and the tours could include tastings of these Douro wines and port wines, and then, you know, you could visit the old bar there, and, you know, there's a tasting room which is from 19th century.
Wow, a lot of old charm happening.
Yes, it's really old. The entire place is this, that can transport you back to some, you know, 16th, 17th century when you go there. Beautiful, lovely place. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about more of port wines.
All right.
Did you know that some termites in Africa have a pleasantly minty flavor?
Did you know that India's largest music festival was in a way conceptualized in Estonia?
Did you know that the awesomest chips in the world are found only inside US prisons?
Hello, I'm Chuck.
I'm Srikid.
And I'm Naren.
And together we are
Simplified,
a podcast that helps you appear smarter to an audience that knows no different.
Or give you some stuff to talk about at parties.
We are ultra crepidarians.
And if you don't know what that means,
then tune in to Simplified with a B on iTunes, Audioboom, or your favorite podcasting app. Episodes out every fortnight.
Hello and welcome back. And now Samira is going to tell us about different types of port wines.
Yes, Portugal known for its port wine. And the port wines divided into three big families: white, tawny and ruby. And the first made from white grapes and the other two from red grapes. And the white port offers like a range of colors that can vary from pale white to amber. And the ruby family admits a red tonality that extends from like light red to very, very dark red and almost black.
Yeah.
Wow. And the, just keeps getting scarier. This. The tawny family usually extends from colors like auburn, copper and amber. So again, pretty looking. So let's start with tawny, like the characteristics it would include. Like tawnies are ambered color to brown and nutty, dried fruit, figgy in flavor. And, you know, thanks to years of like slow controlled oxidation in large wooden barrels, they go by like two names, either Colheita.
Yeah, I hope Colheita, that, the vintage.
Yeah, I'm so scared about these pronunciations. So there's one called Colheita and the other one aged tawny. And aged tawny is leaner and it has more spirit in them. And if we talk about like pairing tawny, it would it's best served chilled in summer or winter. And, you know, it can be drunk at the end of the meal also, probably, you know, with walnuts to nibble. And there's also Portugal star cheese. Again, a very scary pronunciation coming up. Queijo Serra de Estrela. This cheese apparently is had with quite a few of the wines. Coming to now, the ruby category.
So before you talk about the ruby port, I just wanted to mention it to the listeners that port wine is one of the wines where actually the grape spirit is added in and which means brandy basically. So it's a fortified wine. It's not your, you know, regular wine that you drink. Yeah.
Very interesting. And then ruby, over here, the ruby ports, where the vintage port is the other top end style, are a more redder, firmer, slightly sweeter and fruitier than tawny. And you can taste the sweet ripeness of the hot sun of the Douro Valley in this style of the port.
See, now you know why I call it Sunshine City.
And definitely a sweeter, which you would imagine like the true port lovers, I'm sure, go for the sweetest breed. Yeah. And in years old, vintage port had to be kept for years for its tough tannin and spirit to soften to drinkability. Now, the spirit used to fortify port is of finer quality, and modern methods in vineyard, cellar and warehouse make vintage port a much more balanced, less tannic wine that is drinkable after only a few years, although it was still aged and developed complexity. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Like, Ruby, I feel, is a little more complex and more favorite amongst people, isn't it?
It's got much more tannin than the tanny, because and I prefer the tanny ports than ruby ports. So, but I also like some nice ruby ports which are not too high on sugar and not too sweet and not too much of too high on alcohol, because obviously you have spirit in them, so you have to be careful about the alcohol part as well.
You don't have a sweet tooth, I've noticed.
Yeah, but all the port wines are sweet. Almost all of them. Most of them.
So they are best drunk at a cool room temperature. And so these are a good match. The ruby is a good match with bitter chocolate or coffee desserts.
Yes.
And they're preferred to have like that. Yes. So let's come to white. Now, the white ports come in various level of sweetness. There is dry, which is actually quite sweet. Then there's medium dry, which is pretty sweet. And there's a seriously sweet one for the ones who have a sweet tooth. Not for you, Rojita, the Dolce.
Yeah, yes. That must be extremely sweet. I haven't had a Dolce port yet.
That must give someone a sugar high.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yes, so this new style of port, sweet, fortified and rosé, this is made to drink chilled and neat or in cocktails. Now, these are also served with, if we talk about pairings, they are best with nuts and served with appetizers and really enjoyed. But this, particularly the white, has not had so much with desserts because I think it's pretty sweet enough.
Yeah. Yeah. True. You could just drink it on its own. Like a sweet dish on its own.
Yeah.
And not very far from Porto City is a place called Douro. And Douro Valley is very famous. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site since 2001. It's famous for the terraced vineyards, which is one of the best in the world. Most beautiful vineyards that you would see in the world, in fact. And it's one of the oldest demarcated wine regions as well. And it's just a very short trip from Porto to Douro. Mm-hmm. And the very interesting part is, earlier, all the wines, the vineyards used to be in Douro Valley. Mm-hmm. And the grapes used to be harvested there. And they were brought down to Porto, to Villa Nova di Gaia, to make the wines in those wine cellars.
Oh.
So there used to be a long commute from Douro to Porto. But since last couple of years, a lot of wine companies, they have started establishing their own wineries in Douro region. And because the institute, they allowed them to make wines at Douro. Mm-hmm. And that's when the wine companies have started making their own wines.
Okay.
But interestingly, Douro also makes some non-sweet, regular white and red wines as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not just port wines. They also make the regular Douro wines as well. So I visited a couple of wineries. And, there's one called Quinta do Popa. Mm-hmm. The beautiful winery, I think one of the best views of Douro you can get from there. It's like a window over the Douro River, and where the panoramic reflects all the splendor of a unique terroir. And the name and the history of this Quinta are the symbol of a dream that has been passed down from generation to generation. And this dream was of Francisco Ferreira, better known as Popa. That's his name, basically, which is carried forward by Steven Ferreira, who is the son and now who's taking care of the entire operation now. His son, he achieved this dream by joining smaller plots of land and creating a real farm, which he named Popa, to pay tribute to his father. And today, his grandchildren lead the project with the support and the great experience of the oenologist Louis Pato. And Quinta do Popa provides some of the best wine experiences in Douro region. And for that reason, is in great demand, actually. And the best part is, Quinta do Popa is also one of the most active wine companies on social media. And the moment you walk into that estate, you could see all these hashtags and social media signs.
Cool.
And it's a really fancy and beautiful place to be. And there's another one called Villa de Souza.
Okay.
And that's also a very nice place, very old place. They used to supply stock of wines to other companies, mm-hmm. but now they have started making their own port wine since last couple of years. There is another one called Quinta Nova, which is a 250 years ago. The company used to do the, you know, first harvesting, and then they used to supply the wines, and then they started making wine. And so that's another place to visit. There is Quinta de Seco, and there's a couple of more. So I think that's one place that everyone should definitely make a trip to. Well, we could have another episode dedicated only to port wines, but in this we also have to talk a lot more about Portugal. So let's just move on.
Yes, let's give our listeners a formal introduction to the land of Portugal. And definitely, if you're planning to visit, you must have guessed by now that wines are something for all the wine lovers. This is a place, but where is it located? What other things can you look forward to, when all the distinct things what make Portugal what it is, we're going to talk about? Firstly, Portugal is the westernmost country of Europe and is located in the Iberian Peninsula, surrounded by Spain to the north and east and the Atlantic Ocean to the south and west. And Portugal is one of the oldest country in Europe. Did you know that, Rajita?
Yes.
And I think that's where the whole mystical feeling of the place come from.
I think that was also the country which first explored the sea route.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think Portugal has a lot of contribution to the society.
Absolutely. You know? The oldest. And in fact, the language also, for that matter, it's spoken in 9 countries.
Yeah. So very, like, we have a Portugal connection in India. Yeah, in Goa, yeah. You find so many people.
And in fact, I'll tell you, my parents stayed in Angola for a few years, and they came back speaking Portuguese, because that's what you speak there.
Wow.
So
that's
another quite a popular language. And Portugal has had the same defined border since 1139, making it the oldest nation state in Europe.
Wow.
And along with that, there's port wine, medieval castles, the many recipes and taste of bacalhau, the Portuguese word for cod fish, which is so, so famous. And there's also one more thing. It gave us the word tea. Thank you, Portugal, for that. Because we know what tea lovers we are.
Yeah.
So it gave us that word. When the first Portuguese encountered tea in China, it was called chá or chá, I think.
Maybe Sha.
Sha, yeah, fancy. The first published encounter with tea was in 1560 by Portuguese missionary Gaspar da Cruz. And the first European destination to start drinking tea was, in fact, Portugal, playing a huge role in introducing the beverage to destinations along its trade routes in the 16th century.
No wonder everyone calls it tea now.
Yeah, and you know, we are talking about so many wines. I just want to tell you that Portugal is the largest cork, C-O-R-K.
Cork producer.
Yes, the largest cork producer in the world.
Yeah.
It produces 70% of the world cork's exports. And main importers of Portuguese cork are Germany, the UK and the US.
Yeah. In fact, it's getting more expensive to produce cork there.
Yeah.
And because it also has environmental effect.
Yeah.
So there was a trend in between, people started shifting to your synthetic corks.
Mm-hmm.
But now again, companies are going back to, you know, using the regular corks, which maximum of this comes from Portugal.
Yeah, because it has the largest cork forest.
Yeah.
So, which is a very amazing. And without further delay, let's talk about the capital of Portugal, which I think you must have on your visiting list, which is Lisbon. And it sounds very, very exciting. And in fact, I want to tell everyone that Lisbon actually has the oldest bookstore in the world. Yes,
wow.
The Bertrand Bookshop, which has been around since 1732. You can find this piece of history in Lisbon's Barro Alto neighborhood. And the bookstore was unfortunately destroyed in an earthquake that rocked the city in 1755, but was moved to the same location where you can find it at today in 1773.
That's interesting.
Yes, so
I think that should be something that I would like to visit when I go to Lisbon. And next. And I also wanted to tell you that, you know, like we have the fight between Delhi and Bombay, whose city is the best.
Yeah.
They have this fight between Lisbon and Portugal, saying Porto, saying,
oh, really?
You know, Porto is better or Lisbon is better.
So which one is the Bombay of the two, you would say?
I think Lisbon is the...
Yeah.
Oh, no. Maybe Porto.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we can't compare them to Delhi, Bombay, but the fight they have is mood like that.
Yeah, but Lisbon sounds absolutely amazing. I mean, if I'm visiting Portugal, I would definitely have it on my list. In fact, the Vasco da Gama Bridge in Lisbon is 10.5 miles. That's 17 kilometers long, making it the longest in Europe.
Wow.
So these are some amazing things to look forward to.
There's one more tunnel, mm-hmm. the road tunnel between Douro and Porto City. That's also one of the longest tunnels, by the way.
Wow.
Portugal has a lot of biggest and longest things in the world.
I hope that sounded right. So talking about Lisbon, it's stretching along the banks of the Tagus River near the Atlantic Ocean. And you know, this Portugal's capital and largest city winds upwards among seven steep hills, which makes it beautiful. And what do you look forward to over here? The weather, alluring alleys, quaint shops, Gothic cathedral, impressive bridges like we mentioned, and some traditional fado music which you can hear along the way.
That's interesting, really.
Yeah.
So there's another place which is very close to Lisbon. Mm-hmm. It's called Sintra, which has got its own microclimate.
Okay.
It's just 30 minutes drive from Lisbon.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this has somehow inspired the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales.
Okay.
So the fairy tales by H.C. Andersen, they are inspired by this place because, you know, the mountain roads, the bold palaces, overgrown atmosphere, it's not a stretch to imagine prince and princesses spending their days on the mountainside.
Wow.
In a place like that. But the most interesting thing about Sintra, maybe, is its weather, as I mentioned. It's got its own small climatic area. And it's not noticeably cooler than Lisbon. It's got more clouds and fog, which quickly roll in and out of the mountains, making it like a place to take some amazing photographs if you're visiting the place. And somehow this odd weather pattern has given it like storybook feeling to it.
Wow.
So that's something which, you know, sounds very interesting to visit, isn't it?
Absolutely. And another city which you can probably, another place you can look forward to is Algarve.
Oh,
yes, known to be very, very beautiful. Again, every city that we're talking about is mentioning very good climate. So I think people who are starved for like good climate should definitely head to Portugal. So this place has like sunny Mediterranean climate, beautiful beaches, picturesque towns, historic sites, fabulous cuisine, and affordable costs for that matter, you know, which make it one of the best places to visit in Portugal.
Think about it. Portugal, Spain, Greece, all these places, they're in the southern part of Europe.
Yeah.
And they've got the best Mediterranean kind of climate, and they are the perfect locations to go and, you know, travel around, and the food and the drinks there are so good. I think the best of Europe is in the southern part of.
I think so. And I think anyone who is lucky and fortunate enough to get a long holiday should just head out and cover all these three
and
arms
from
in like
Spain
4
to Portugal
months.
Is like really by road, it's very easy to
and I think that's
travel.
Why maybe the cultures are a little similar, like they borrow some similarities.
Yeah, quite a lot of similarities.
Yeah, so that's coming to Algarve, it's located in the country's southernmost region, and it offers a feast for the eyes from tranquil landscapes of olive groves, traditional whitewashed villages to the wild. You know, that sounds amazing. And along with that, there's enough beauty to look at in the day, and Lagos is the area for hotspot for nightlife. So it's a great combination if you're looking for like great time to spend in the day, enough beauty for the eyes in the day, and enough things to do at night. Yeah. It has a good nightlife, and it's looped by orange groves. So Silves is best known for its red sandstone castle, while Tavira, an elegant town packed with Renaissance monument bridges and castles.
Sounds amazing.
It does.
Great. So there's another place, Madeira Island.
Ooh, I've heard about these.
Madeira wines. Yes, the Madeira Island.
Okay.
So basically, sporting the nickname Floating Garden of the Atlantic, Madeira is an archipelago in Atlantic Ocean between Portugal and North Africa, popular for its lush green landscapes, flower gardens and wines, of course. The must-see places include the Orchard Garden and the Laurie Silva Forest, which harbors the world's largest concentration of laurel. The capital and largest city of Madeira is Funchal, home to historic churches, fortresses, tourist resorts and restaurants, as well as a three-lined Lido promenade, which represents spectacular ocean views. And one more thing.
Yeah.
the Funchal Airport is mm-hmm. also considered, not to discourage anyone, one of the most extreme airports in the world.
I have heard. And listeners, because we were watching videos, Rajita, before coming here.
Yeah, just before we were preparing for this, we were watching a video where the airplane was trying to land on the airstrip. And it was, yeah, because half the time they have to turn it because of the crosswinds. And it's just next to the sea. And it's really difficult. One of the most extreme airports in the world to actually land aircraft.
I could take a road trip to Madeira.
You can't. It's an island. It's kind of an island. So you can't.
But that was scary. Like the
you have to just pray and sit on the aircraft.
90 degrees and that's how it kind of landed.
Okay, let's not scare the listeners.
Yeah, I know. But it's an experience, guys.
Yes, so now coming back to Madeira wines. Mm-hmm. You know, the Madeira wines has that nutty, deliberately oxidized and slightly caramelized quality from wood aging under the influence of heat. And Madeira ranges in sweetness from just off dry to seriously sweet, like really sweet wines. Mm. Very little is made nowadays of the traditional wines named after their grape varieties and traditionally made each as at its own individual level of sweetness. And in rising order of sweetness, these are, you know, Sercial, Tarantes, Verdejo, Boal and Malvasia. All these are white grapes. The mm-hmm. red varieties are from Tinta Negra, is now also made into all those sweetness levels by the same heating and oxidative methods. Mm-hmm. That's something complicated. We might talk about that in our future episodes, mm-hmm. the process of making port wines. But yeah, for the time being, you know, just to understand, it's possible to buy extraordinary bottles of intensely flavored and really complex old wines that are made from old white grape varieties. And some of the other famous, just diverting a little bit from Madeira, another grape variety is, the wine is called Vinho Verde. People are familiar with port, but Portugal also has other famous wines like Moscatel and the wines from Alentejo, and then obviously Vinho Verde, which is made from Alvarinho grape. It's like a young green sparkling wine from Minho. Mm-hmm. And also regular white wines as well.
And apart from the amazing wine that you get in Portugal, you need to pair it up with some food. And Portugal is very famous for the food that I was kind of like reading about is a lot of comfort food, like which your grandma would make, a lot of mom and pop restaurants. So it's not very high end or fancy, but I think the dishes are more nicely homemade cooked meal and the bacalhau, which is so famous.
You know, the first thing I had once I landed in Porto was this.
And how was it? Tell me like the taste and the flavor.
I know, we just took it from one of the regular roadside shops.
Right.
And I just had that with a bottle of Portugal beer and that was amazing.
So you get it like even on the roadside, or it's just like fancy restaurants everywhere.
You get it everywhere. Okay. But the best part is
it's like the vada pav in Mumbai.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's so many wine bars across the city mm-hmm. that where you could actually get the local food in tapas style. I mean, they're small dishes mm-hmm. and they're fantastic. Really nice to try out with your wines.
Yes, if you're heading there, what is bacalhau? It's the salt cod and it's staple in Portugal, eaten two or three times a week, and it's available in all kinds of ways, from baked with cream and potatoes to a cold chickpea salad, and like how you mentioned,
it
just
tastes delicious
on the road
with potato especially.
Yeah.
It's like the fish and chips version from from England.
Yeah. Well, and another something which is very famous is the pastel de nata. It's the quintessential Portuguese custard tart, and Portugal is a nation of sugar lovers, and everybody knows the nata and they absolutely love it. And you know, again, from the restaurants to somewhere along the way or in the bakeries, that's something you get. Something a little more towards the delicacy side is the Azores caviar. From tuna to octopus, tinned or preserved fish is huge in Portugal. Sardine roe is particularly prized, and for the Portuguese, it's a delicacy. And it's available in unique texture and flavor. And another one is the Caldo Verde.
What's that?
I love these names. I don't know what's in it, but I would just order for how fancy it sounds. So, well, this is one of the most iconic comfort dishes you find in most restaurants and at home. And the five quintessential ingredients that are used in this are potato, onion, olive oil, kale, and churrico. It's as simple as that. It's
great.
Comfort and simple and well made. So if you're heading there, these are a few things I feel
you
along with
try.
Your wine you must yeah. try.
Yeah. So I think we've covered quite a lot with the destinations and things to do. And one more thing that you definitely need to do is to take a cruise ride from Porto to Douro Valley, because the river is absolutely stunning.
Mm-hmm.
That's a place that you must visit, and especially last year it was voted as one of the best locations in the world. And I think if anyone has not done a trip to Portugal this year, it should be there. And the five must things,
yeah, let's quickly recap for our listeners. The five must things you can look forward to you're heading to Portugal, I would say: wine.
Yes, absolutely. The port wine, the Douro wines, the Madeira wines, and obviously your Vinho Verde, and so many varieties.
Number two, you would say?
I think for a diversified culture that all the cities have, places like Lisbon or maybe Porto and Douro, and you know, it's, and then Madeira, of course. It's definitely a completely different experience to go there.
Right. At number three, I would say the food.
Of course.
Very interesting and distinct.
The chorizo.
Yeah.
I suddenly remembered, oh my God, I think we got chorizo from Portugal.
Yes, I think so. So the custard tarts and the chorizos and the bacalhau. Yeah. Number four, you would say?
The cruise. Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. Of course, the cruise.
So make sure you include this in your top five list. And number five would be the nightlife, I'd say. You know, you're eating, you're drinking, you're seeing beautiful places. But for everyone out there ready to enjoy great nightlife, that's something you should have on your list as well.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for listening to the Drinks and Destinations podcast, and tune in to our episode next week.
To listen to our episode, you can go on SoundCloud, Audioboom, iTunes, or any other local podcast app. You can like, comment, follow Drinks and Destinations on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can also like, comment, and subscribe to our podcast on YouTube under the name Indus Vox Media.
And yeah, so while all of us love our tipple, make sure that you drink responsibly.
Our podcasts bring all the boys to the yard, and damn right, they're better than yours. But you don't need to stand outside in the yard. Just follow IVM Podcasts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We might be on Tinder too. Just go ahead and swipe right.